Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike DeBusky. Two more U.S. trading partners are now facing the threat of increased tariffs. President Trump posting on social media that the European Union and Mexico will be hit with 30% tariffs starting August 1st, unless they strike a new trade deal with the United States. It comes on the heels of the president's visit to Texas yesterday, where stories of survival are continuing to pour in from last week's deadly flash floods. John Manera is a volunteer firefighter in the area.
So my two guys, they donned the flotation devices, they grabbed ropes, they entered the water, they reached the victim, found her, made sure she was okay, she was alive. They pulled her up to safety and we secured her until we could get her across the river.
And fuel cutoff switches were activated shortly after an Air India flight took off last month, with a preliminary report finding they likely contributed to a crash that killed more than 140 people. This is ABC News. Sources tell ABC News the relationship between two of the highest-ranking Trump administration officials appears to be fraying over the investigation into disgraced New York financier Jeffrey Epstein, who died in jail in 2019. ABC News Chief Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas.
Sources tell ABC News of a fiery confrontation between Deputy FBI Director Dan Bongino and Attorney General Pam Bondi over the department's handling of the investigation into sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Sources tell us Bongino told allies he may resign. For years, Bongino, a former podcast host, and his boss, FBI Director Kash Patel, stoked conspiracy theories over Epstein's death, insisting shadowy forces within the government engaged in a massive cover-up.
The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration finds Ford issued more recalls in the first half of this year than the next five car manufacturers combined. 89 recalls so far already makes for a full year record for a single automaker. Mike DeBusky, ABC News.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The Big Beautiful Bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes
right
in the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman. A former Wisconsin mayor says the new federal budget will only worsen the current aging crisis that families like hers have been facing. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
Analysis from the Congressional Budget Office suggests President Trump's budget bill will trigger automatic cuts to Medicare due to an expected increase in the national deficit. Former Middleton Mayor Judy Kurofsky says that would impact hospice services and end-of-life programs already in need of greater funding. She explains when her mother was 99, the local hospice agency determined that she was not dying soon enough and abruptly discontinued her services. She explains how this also triggered her eviction from the assisted living facility where she was at the time.
My mother was 99 and a half when that was decided. We were on our own for a matter of months. She did die within the next 6 months, just before she turned 100. It was cruel.
Kurofsky says cuts to Medicare would rob many of the most vulnerable Americans of their right to a dignified death. Hospice provides patients and families with things like pain relief, medical equipment, nursing care, and spiritual support. Studies show hospice saves Medicare and families money by reducing increasing overall health care spending. Kurofsky says without it, families are faced with financial burdens that few can bear. Kurofsky says the issue of underregulated assisted living facilities will worsen the current aging crisis across the country. In her book, Disorderly Conduct, The Flawed Business of Assisted Living and Hospice, Kurofsky recounts her mother's negative experience at 6 assisted living facilities in Wisconsin and calls on action to address the ongoing crisis. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly sunny today with a high near 83. Scattered showers and thunderstorms possible. Tonight, clear and 62. Sunshine, 82 for Sunday. For Monday, sunshine with highs in the mid-80s. Scattered showers and storms possible on Tuesday with a high of 87.
Right now, it's 65.
Maggie Dawn.
Matt Rothschild is in the guest host seat with me on Monday. We keep you up to date. Who's out and who's in? Is it Bongino and Patel or Bondi at the DOJ?
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, and I am your host. My name is Jim Santel. This hour and next hour as well. This, as always, is our weekly weekend review of all things justice-related, government-related, rule of law-related. We take our name Amicus, sometimes referred to as Amicus Curiae, a friend of the court, but a friend of the community, providing you with helpful information to enable you to assess, to evaluate, to examine the world around us, including especially those topics in the areas of justice delivery and the rule of law. This weekend's broadcast, no exception to that commission. Delighted that you have chosen to join me and my producer Max for some portion of this weekend, and that includes your comments, your questions, especially your inquiries, your quizzical matters that you want to bring to my attention. You can do that in a couple of different ways. You can always call in at 855-752-4842. That number once again is 855-752-4842. Max always reminds me as well that you can be in touch with us by dropping a comment, your question into our chat box. And we encourage you to do just that. Be a part of our discussion, especially this weekend, as we have a great variety of cornucopia, if you will, of rule of law issues to discuss. Lots of things going on. Some of them related to matters that we have talked about in recent weeks and months. Some of them brand new. Some of them brand new from all places on the face of the planet, including right here in the state of Wisconsin. What are we going to be talking about this edition of Amicus, a law review? We are going to start our discussion right here in the state of Wisconsin, talking about a latest important decision by our Supreme Court. Sounds wonky, I know. Sounds lawyerish, I know. And that's because it is both of those things. But it is also much more. It's also about administrative rulemaking. And yes, indeed, the balance of power authorities between the legislative branch and the executive branch, the Assembly and Senate and our governor's office, specifically talking about a major decision of our Supreme Court, once again split about who has responsibility for issuing, making, maintaining, enforcing rules. In the state of Wisconsin. How is it that you can establish those rules, and how can you overturn rules that are presently in place? We'll talk about that. It also has as its core a significant LGBTQIA issue, and that is the roundly rejected notion of conversion therapy. That's at the core of that issue. And we'll talk all about what the Supreme Court did in both of those areas in just a few moments. We also have some other important news coming out of litigation here in the state of Wisconsin, a new lawsuit another lawsuit, this one challenging, once again, the line drawing for our congressional districts, those folks we sent to Washington, D.C. to serve in our House of Representatives, not the Assembly here in the state of Wisconsin or the Senate. This is about congressional elections and the line drawing for those. A new lawsuit. Taking on a different strategy, taking on a slightly different theory. It is fascinating. It is interesting. And it also reaffirms, from my perspective, this notion that, yes, indeed, it is good to develop a record on these cases. And by that, I mean starting in the trial court, where you can have a hearing and you can have evidence and you can present information to a judge or a jury about the merits of the case. That can be appealed then to an appeals court, ultimately getting to the Supreme Court, but not beginning in the first instance at the highest court. We see that a lot, or at least attempts to do that here in Wisconsin. We see it a lot with breakneck speed in these recent months and years. In the federal government, as well as our United States Supreme Court, takes on with greater rapidity this great number of emergency applications coming right to the Supreme Court to stop what's going on at lower courts before those lower courts have had the chance to do what? To develop the record I'm talking about. So we've got some interesting things happening here in the state of Wisconsin. New litigation, new Supreme Court decision. That's all right here in the state of Wisconsin. There are also things going on in other places of our nation, and that includes in Central California. We'll talk about a major decision by a federal district court judge just on Friday of this past week, telling the federal government that they cannot, in fact, engage in racial profiling, telling law enforcement generally cannot engage in arresting citizens, residents of Los Angeles, based upon racial perceptions, and instead need to have the reasonable suspicion that must undermine, must provide a predicate for every single non-warrant-based arrest in America. We'll talk about the reason why that's important, especially in Los Angeles. Yes, once again, we'll talk about why that particular judge entered the order, the injunction that she did with respect to law enforcement. We'll talk about another injunction, this one grabbing major headlines as well early in the week. This one also from a federal judge. He is in New Hampshire, and he has, yes, once again, taken on this birthright citizenship issue. And whether or not a single federal judge can enjoin, can stop the president's executive order of way back on the first day that he was in the first day in office of this present term, whether a federal judge can enter a national injunction. We know that the Supreme Court has said you can't do that. Amy Coney Barrett wrote in that massive order of a couple of weeks ago. And this judge in New Hampshire taking that on and saying, I understand the directive. I'm going to find a class of residents. And yes, as he says, citizens, newborns across the country who are subject to this executive order. And I'm going to stop the executive order as to them. And I'm going to do that by finding that they form a class. A class action is what was brought in front of him. He embraced that. He seized upon that. And he entered his order. Certainly not the last word there. Certainly not the last word when it comes to this overall issue of national injunctions, universal stoppings of things going on. And in particular, birthright citizenship. We'll talk about that. Then we're also going to talk about another major Supreme Court case. I know, you thought the Supreme Court was done with all of its major rulings. And indeed, it has issued 67 different major decisions since the term, which continues, began last October. In fact, they continue to issue emergency orders upon emergency applications by the administration. This one, again, from earlier just this past week, permitting the president to go ahead with one of his major landmark executive orders, instructing 19 different federal agencies, 11 of them cabinet level, to begin to downsize. And yes, you might think, gee, isn't this what the Musk team was doing? In part, sure, absolutely. This was an executive order telling all these agencies across the board to reduce the federal workforce dramatically. The Supreme Court just this past week, by a very interesting, very curious 8-1 split, only Ketanji Brown Jackson only Ketanji Brown Jackson objecting to this. The Supreme Court saying, go ahead, Mr. President, you can do just that. And sure enough, within days of that order being issued, we've got reporting coming out of the United States Department of State, confirmed by our Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, of thousands of people now being fired, terminated in the State Department, both there on C Street in Washington, D.C. and around the world, probably no fewer than about 3,000. Yes, three followed by three zeros, 3,000 employees of the State Department alone, probably in the next days and weeks, maybe months, going to be terminated from their jobs. We'll talk about what the consequences of that major Supreme Court emergency ruling, once again, without explanation, without description of the reason, what that contemplates for America, for the federal agencies going forward, why it is once again a major victory for the administration attempting, depending upon how you interpret this, either to change government dramatically, downsize it, attack some of these programs that are out there. And in that connection, we'll chat in particular about my own perspective about what happens when you minimize and reduce dramatically the workforce of the United States Department of State. I will recall some of the experiences that I had for about 2 years when I was in Iraq at the embassy in Baghdad, other places around the Republic of Iraq, with those State Department folks. I'll talk with you about why their presence there understaffed dramatically. I know that sounds controversial. Understaffed, however, dramatically in trying to establish the republic, the democracy, that, in fact, in the end, still exists today in the Republic of Iraq. They've got a parliament. They've got a president. They've got a prime minister. They've got a legislature. They've got people engaged in voting and elective politics there, in major part because of things that the State Department and its political entities and its democracy entities, and yes, I will immodestly say also the Department of Justice and our rule of law initiatives there also did a lot to promote. We'll talk about what the consequences are when you minimize and slash dramatically the role of the State Department, not just in Iraq, around the nation, and indeed in Washington, D.C., all of that coming out of the federal government just this past week. And then finally, we're going to spend some time talking about another favorite topic here on Amicus, a law review, and that is what's going on inside the Department of Justice. We'll begin with the announcement by our Attorney General. Her name is Pamela Bondi, of a major lawsuit. The Department of Justice, your Department of Justice, yes, that's right, is suing an entire federal district court, the District Court of Maryland, maintaining that its recent actions with respect to the deportations and a temporary stay on deportations while the judges there have an opportunity to review petitions challenging deportations. Your United States Department of Justice suing the entire district court, all the judges there by name, saying you're in violation of the Constitution, you cannot do this. We'll talk about what that significant piece of litigation brought in the Maryland court, now transferred, of course, to another district because the very defendants in that case are the judges in that Maryland court. We'll talk about that. If you're scratching your head, so am I. We'll talk about what that means. We'll also talk internal to the Department of Justice about many of the things that are also part of the rule of law news of just past week. We see that the Deputy Attorney General, Todd Blanche, and the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, this week beginning to fire more January 6 prosecutors. We know in the past that they have let go many of those who are on a probationary, non-permanent status. Now we see for the first time the termination of long-standing criminal prosecutors who have had the capacity before to engage in this kind of prosecution work. They have been fired this past week. We'll talk about what that means. We'll talk also about these reports about tumult generally inside the Department of Justice having to do with polygraph tests administered arguably to law enforcement supervisors, FBI supervisors around the country. Even more significantly, this apparent battle among the Deputy Attorney General, the Attorney General, maybe the Deputy Director, the Director of the FBI, involving all sorts of things, including what happened inside the Department of Justice at the time of a major suicide. You recall that one well, that has animated much of our news. We'll talk about all that. We'll talk about some disclosures related to declarations and positions taken at the time of the president's decision to suspend the law. Remember this way back when on TikTok, that legislation to prohibit their continued involvement in American life. We'll talk about some things revealed inside the Department of Justice and more, all of that coming up on this edition of Amicus Law Review. Stay with us for that important discussion.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
This is the story of the one. As a lineman, he does whatever it takes to keep the power on in his community. And he wants a partner like Grainger who does the same. Grainger offers the professional-grade products he needs, from voltage detectors to harnesses to hard hats, plus fast, dependable delivery. So he can rise to every challenge. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The Big Beautiful Bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right. In the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org, a message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, your host this hour and next hour as well on our discussion of all things rule of law related. We are going to begin jumping right into our discussion this weekend, talking about things happening right here in the state of Wisconsin, not federal matters, although they're connected to them tangentially and directly in some ways. But we're going to spend most of our time in this next segment talking about two major things that happened right inside our state, both of them rule of law related, both of them about predicate issues, but actually having instruction for all of us with respect to larger topics about how we litigate, how we understand justice, how we administer that through the courts. Let's get right into that as well. You may recall well that we and other broadcasts talked a lot about this major decision of a couple of weeks ago, right before the 4th of July, the Supreme Court finding that this state abortion ban that was enacted way back in 1849 no longer in effect. The Supreme Court saying, even though it's been dormant for five decades, all sorts of things have happened in the interim to make it clear that the legislature no longer regarded that particular ban as being in effect. And because of that, all the subsequent litigation, all the subsequent orders about how abortion can, in fact, be effectuated and accomplished in the state of Wisconsin means that that 1849 law never in effect, at least not in the wake of the 2022 decision coming out of our federal Supreme Court that overruled Roe versus Wade, places in effect the Dobbs decision, which says there is no federal privacy right, no constitutional right to abortion. Now our Supreme Court, a couple of weeks ago, our state Supreme Court saying that here in Wisconsin, that old 1849 law not resurrected, not revived, abortion legal in the state of Wisconsin because of all of the legislative actions by our Assembly, by our Senate in that period of time that make it clear that the law was not in effect. Now we've got another major case coming out of our Wisconsin Supreme Court that also has a lot to tell us about the rule of law, how we stand in America. This one having to do underlying the decision is all about a thing called conversion therapy. We'll get back to that in just a moment. It is significant as a core issue and what that means once again in the state of Wisconsin. But we're also going to talk about what the larger implications of this Supreme Court decision are. Wisconsin Supreme Court just this past week approving the decision by our governor, Tony Evers, to go ahead with a rule that bans conversion therapy. And that's the core of the decision. But it's actually more interesting and more complicated than that in both regards, both the substance of it and the procedural. Basically saying that the committee, a state committee, a joint committee, cannot effectively rulemake, that that's within the governor's purview, can't do that without the full consent of both houses of our state legislature. Supreme Court clearing the way for the state to permanently enact a ban, again, on conversion therapy, and a ruling, this ruling that at the same time gives our governor a whole lot more power over how state rules and procedures and practices are enacted. The court specifically ruled, again, right down so-called partisan lines, that a Republican-controlled legislative committee's rejection, its decision not to go ahead, not to approve the governor, the administration's rule on conversion therapy, that would effectively ban that practice here in the state of Wisconsin, was unconstitutional. Again, that ruling has major implications for conversion therapy, which, again, now continue to be banned in the state of Wisconsin, but also broad impact on how it is that power is delegated and relegated between the two various branches of government, the legislature and the governor as well. The legislature cannot block the enactment by rules of, announced by the governor that carry the force of law. Basically, let's go back to the core. What is conversion therapy? Where does this begin? Well, it is known again as conversion therapy. It's been out there, regrettably, for much too long a period of time. It is this scientifically discredited. Virtually every, and probably I can eliminate the word virtually from that sentence, every single legitimate medical authority has discredited this notion, this practice of using some therapies to convert somehow LGBTQIA people to heterosexuality or traditional gender expectations, whatever those might be. The practice has been banned because of its medical inadequacy, the fraudulent nature of that practice in about 23 states in the District of Columbia. And there are an awful lot of folks out there that say that not only is it ineffective, but it's actually affirmatively harmful. Again, medical authorities saying this is not something that any forward-looking and a significant entity, including states and municipalities, other units of government, should in any way embrace. Advocates seeking to ban that practice wanted to forbid this mental health practice and prohibiting professionals from pursuing it across the country. And they've been successful in doing that. Interestingly, as a side note, just in March of this year, the United States Supreme Court indicating that this remains, believe it or not, yet another issue that they're taking up, agreed to hear a Colorado case that challenges whether the state and local governments there can enforce laws banning conversion therapy for LGBTQIA children in that state. So this issue isn't going away anytime soon. But at least now in Wisconsin, by virtue of what the Supreme Court has done, that is to uphold the rulemaking authority of the governor and the administration to ban this kind of discredited therapy. Now it is banned in the state of Wisconsin as well. Interestingly, both in 2019 and 2020, the Wisconsin Professional Licensing Board, recognizing the inadequacy, the fallacy of this particular treatment, had, with the involvement of therapists and counselors and social workers and medical providers, proposed this rule that listed conversion therapy as unprofessional conduct, right? But the legislature's very powerful committee called the Committee for Review of Administrative Rules had blocked the proposed rule twice, most recently in 2023. The rule was effectively in order in 2022, took effect again in 2024 when the legislature adjourned without permanently suspending it. And that leads up to what the Supreme Court had in front of it this past week. We'll tell you what they did with that procedural history as Amicus Law Review continues.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. Two more U.S. trading partners are now facing the threat of increased tariffs. President Trump posting on social media that the European Union and Mexico will be hit with 30% tariffs starting August 1st, unless they strike a new trade deal with the United States. It comes on the heels of the president's visit to Texas yesterday, where stories of survival are continuing to pour in from last week's deadly flash floods. John Manera is a volunteer firefighter in the area.
So my two guys, they donned the flotation devices, they grabbed ropes, they entered the water, they reached the victim, found her, made sure she was okay, she was alive. They pulled her up to safety and we secured her until we could get her across the river.
And fuel cutoff switches were activated shortly after an Air India flight took off last month, with a preliminary report finding they likely contributed to a crash that killed more than 140 people. This is ABC News.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
The Miz is headed to the All-Star Game. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Brewers rookie pitcher Jacob Mizorowski has been selected to pitch in the All-Star Game Tuesday night at 23 and just 5 starts, the Miz setting an All-Star record for earliest career appearance. I asked him, how did his teammates react?
They were all thrilled about it and they're happy for me. But yeah, no, it's been the world for the guys to be around me and support me how they have. It's been awesome.
Brewers pitcher D.L. Hall.
Incredible. I mean, I think we all know, you know, he's worthy of it. The kid's stuff is unbelievable. It's fun to watch. And like Murph said, it's super exciting and it's good for baseball. So we're also super happy for him.
The Brewers went on to beat the Nationals 8-3. The two teams play again today. Brandon Woodruff gets the start. NBA, the Bucks introduced center Miles Turner to the media. The Bucks facing the Cavaliers today in summer league action in Las Vegas. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly sunny today with a high near 83. Scattered showers and thunderstorms possible. Tonight, clear and 62. Sunshine, 82 for Sunday. For Monday, sunshine with highs in the mid-80s. Scattered showers and storms possible on Tuesday with a high of 87.
Right now, it's 65.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Trump is again trying to have it both ways on agricultural workers. He says they're working on, quote, a temporary pass where the farmer can have a little control as opposed to you walk in and take everybody away. He's describing feudalism, where the people who work the land are more under direct control of the land owners rather than the rule of law. He wants the vassals. He wants the lords. He wants the peasants.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The Big Brutal Bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right. In the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we go beyond the cheese with the Canine Convoy based in Oconto. We're talking Dog Bus. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
My name is Jim Santel. This is Amicus, a law review on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. We are talking about a lot of things on this weekend's broadcast, including issues right here in the state of Wisconsin, specifically this major decision by the Supreme Court that does, in fact, permit the governor to go ahead with his ban on conversion therapy here in the state of Wisconsin, but also has larger implications for other issues as well in rebalancing, redelegating, if you will, reestablishing the proper roles of the legislature and the executive branch when it comes to who's in charge about setting rules and specifically how those are decided upon. Again, this major committee, the Committee for Review of Administrative Review, it's a joint committee of the state legislature, had tried to block and, in fact, did block for a while the governor's rule. That rule coming out of the Wisconsin Professional Licensing Board saying that conversion therapy, discredited, not effective, harmful, should not be a part of our health care here in the state of Wisconsin. Those who supported the committee said that this is not about the policy, but rather about the capacity of the legislature to decide what the law should be and what the rules in the state of Wisconsin should be. The Supreme Court said no. Supreme Court said that the legislative committee has overdrawn when it comes to its authority by blocking a variety of state regulations during this administration, including most recently conversion therapy. It means the legislature in this area and others will not be able to block this policy and others. The specific decision issued by the majority of the Supreme Court, again, 4-3, right down partisan lines. It is too bad that we continue to talk about any court, including our state Supreme Court, our federal Supreme Court, any justices and judges out there by virtue of their political affiliations. Regrettably, that is sometimes the world in which we live. This one, 4-3 decision, authored by Chief Justice Jill Karofsky. She says that the law, this rule that was the subject of the committee's attempt to block it, a small minority of lawmakers, she said, should not be basically able to veto a rulemaking proposal of the executive branch. That's within the executive authority. She said that what they had done violated two fundamental concepts. And here's your rule of law. Here's your law school instruction for the weekend. She said it violated bicameralism. That is this requirement, as you well recall from your own civics classes, to go before multiple chambers. You have to go to the Assembly and the Senate and get them both to approve, to vote on things. That's bicameralism. And then also presentment. There's another word that comes from your past civics education. That's the requirement that once passed, once both of the houses of the legislature have passed on the legislation, bill has to go to the governor to sign. And in this case, no such thing happened. Stayed at the committee level. They expressed their disapproval of the rule. Not enough, says Jill Karofsky and the majority of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And for that reason, the legislative committee fails in its attempt to overturn this particular rule of the executive branch. Tony Evers calls it incredibly important, again, principally because of the LGBTQIA issue that is at its core. But also, he said, it prevents, again, this kind of thing, prevents holding rules hostage, he said, without explanation or of action or causing gridlock across the government. And, of course, there were equal cries of inappropriate decision-making by the Supreme Court on the other side as well. Significantly, once again, why is this a rule of law issue? The conversion ban therapy, plainly one of several rules that have been blocked by legislative committee. Now that the Supreme Court has said, no, you can't do it this way. You've got to vote. You got to get the governor's signature. Other policies, other practices, other issues out there include things like environmental regulations, vaccine requirements, public health protections. So the full impact of this ruling, yes, with respect to conversion therapy, but also far beyond that in many other ways. Environmentalists, those involved with health and concerned about our general medical status in the state of Wisconsin and beyond, public health protections, all those kinds of things and more. Now it's clear, once again, it was before, and now it's equally clear by virtue of what the Wisconsin Supreme Court has said just this past week, that when it comes to rulemaking, the governor has the authority. Here's the important footnote. Of course, the legislature can overrule that. They can, in effect, pass the very legislation that Jill Karofsky was bemoaning didn't happen here. They can do that by passing an override of the rules announced by the governor, can get that legislation to the governor's desk. He may well veto it, but you can do those kinds of things. It doesn't strip the authority of the legislature to act on any of these kinds of things, including things like public health care and environmental issues. You just have to do it right. And that's what the Supreme Court has said this past week. 4-3 ruling coming out of our Wisconsin Supreme Court. And then we've got this other piece of litigation, not legislation, litigation also percolating up from the state of Wisconsin just this past week, also with some very important rule of law messages and missions for all of us to consider. A new lawsuit, another lawsuit here in Wisconsin, seeking to redraw Wisconsin's congressional, the folks we send to the House of Representatives, congressional district boundaries. That lawsuit filed on Tuesday. And you're going to think, well, gee, haven't we heard this before? We have certainly seen what happened with respect to the parallel, the companion lawsuit, many years in litigation, ultimately resulting in new maps of Wisconsin's assembly and state line drawing, those districts. That has been remedied, at least in part, addressing some of the great concerns about gerrymandering for state elective offices. This one goes to our congressional offices, the folks we send to Washington, D.C. every 2 years, including November of 2026. A new lawsuit now challenging those lines as being unconstitutional, but under a new theory, which we will get to. This, of course, happens, the filing of this lawsuit. You may recall just about 2 weeks ago, the state Supreme Court declined to hear some other cases, two of them in particular, that also sought redistricting before the 2026 election. The latest lawsuit is different from those in two substantive ways, at least from my assessment it is, maybe even three in particular. Here's the first one. The lawsuit is brought by a bipartisan coalition of business leaders. And the reason why that is significant, of course, as we have talked before, what is the connection between business and the rule of law? Why do you want to have business leaders involved in government, including the courts, but also in the legislature? Well, we know that the rule of law and the administration of justice, whether it's legislative, executive, or in the courts, the rule of law is important to sustaining business, right? And if, in fact, you can rely, whether it's in the state of Wisconsin or other places, on the enforcement of contracts, maybe specifically in courtroom settings, but also by the legislature passing laws that are not necessarily favorable to business, but ensure that their interests are heard and supported. If, in fact, the governor, the executive, does the same kind of thing, if the government basically, I don't want to say is pro-business, instead of that, is of a view that business is a good thing and commerce is something to be embraced for the livelihood, our economic livelihood of our nation and of our state, then you've got encouragement for business to act, to move, to be present here, all those good things. So you've got a coalition, by the way, a bipartisan coalition, a subset of this first important point. It's Republicans and Democrats, businessmen coming forward and saying it is good business for us to have good representation from Wisconsin in the House of Representatives. An interesting theory, right, that business supports that on a bipartisan nature. The second thing that's important is, unlike these other lawsuits that seek to hopscotch over the lower courts, the district court, the circuit court, the appellate court, this particular lawsuit does it right. And instead of seeking immediate review by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, maybe ultimately by the United States Supreme Court, instead of going as directly to the Wisconsin Supreme Court on an original jurisdiction theory, it's out there. But again, the Supreme Court saying in those other lawsuits, go back and develop a record at the lower courts, have a trial, have evidence, have people come in and testify as experts, as lay witnesses, tell us what this is all about. That's the way our judicial system works. Have a judgment entered by a lower court that can then be reviewed by an appeals court. Typically, appeals courts in the state of Wisconsin and other places are viewed as error-correcting courts. They will look at lower courts and say, gee, you got this wrong, you got this right, and we will make a review of the lower court decision based upon the analysis of that lower record, and then ultimately comes to the Supreme Court to determine whether or not those lower court rulings are accurate or not. That's the way it should be pursued. And that's effectively, as I read it, what the Supreme Court has been saying. Go back to not square one, but the way that we have always done this in developing those records below. And sure enough, taking that instruction, this bipartisan coalition of business leaders file their case where? Not immediately in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, not seeking immediate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court because it is such an important issue. It may well be, and it certainly is, but they file it where? In Dane County, in the circuit court there, rather than directly with the Supreme Court, as those rejected cases saw in the witnessing of the resolution of those. It is significant that this lawsuit will therefore take a more lengthy journey through the courts. Again, the trial court, the Dane County Circuit Court, will schedule proceedings, pretrial proceedings, trial proceedings. Presumably, whatever the court decides on the merits of this, and we'll get to that in just a moment, that will ultimately go to that error-correcting court, the appeals court, to determine whether or not the lower court's decision was right. And maybe then, could be well into next year, maybe even beyond. Then the Supreme Court takes a look at all this to determine what will happen. Now, I know what you're saying. You're saying, well, gee, Jim, that will mean that there's no way that all of this can be resolved by 2026, which is when the next congressional election is, for these very representatives from those congressional districts in the state of Wisconsin. And yes, that's right. And that is in part the reason why those other lawsuits were brought immediately to the Supreme Court to get expedited action from the Supreme Court. Here, I would advocate that they're doing this correctly, regardless of what you think about whether or not these lines for congressional districts should be drawn, redrawn, how they should be crafted. It is good to develop for the interests of justice and the rule of law, good government, as we did in those other cases. It is good to develop this kind of record and have evidence and have people engaged in, if you will, the adversarial process to get to a result that may not be perfect, may not be exactly what you want, what I want, what all of us want, but nonetheless is a product of this judicial system. The Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy argue in their new lawsuit, again, in Dane County, beginning with a trial court, not at the Supreme Court, that Wisconsin's congressional maps, sending those folks to Washington, D.C., are unconstitutional, not because of racial gerrymandering, not because of political gerrymandering, but because of a cousin to those theories, if you will, because they are anti-competitive. They're anti-competitive. They're not promoting competition among the candidates for those positions. And therefore, they accomplish an anti-competitive gerrymander. Not surprising coming from business people, right? Who are concerned about competition. Things like the Sherman Antitrust Act, the Clayton Antitrust Act in our nation's history to ensure that competition is encouraged. those laws supposed to be enforced by our Department of Justice, and indeed in the state of Wisconsin, we also have a Department of Justice that ensures there's competitiveness among businesses. That's the theory that these businessmen adopt and approach in their new lawsuit. And when we come back, we'll tell you more about a statistic that animates the lawsuit and what this is all about for the future of Wisconsin. We'll continue that discussion right here on Amicus, a law review.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. 5 years after the fake elector scheme to overturn the 2020 election, legal accountability is grinding along for some of the conspirators and those who wittingly or unwittingly supported them. But pardons may be in the wind, too. May 27th, a three-judge New York appellate court stripped Trump campaign attorney Kenneth Chesbro, an alleged key organizer of the swing state fake elector scheme, of his license to practice law in New York. June 16th, the alleged mastermind of the fake elector scheme, John Eastman, was recommended for disbarment in California. He can still appeal the decision. Also June 16th, a civil jury found MyPillow CEO and election denier Mike Lindell liable for $2.3 million for defaming former Dominion Voting Systems executive Eric Coomer. Dominion itself has a claim pending against Lindell, right-leaning news outlets, and several other Trump-alleged conspirators and collaborators. The Michigan Advance reported July 5th that a hearing on whether the trial of 15 of 16 Michigan fake electors should go forward has been moved to September 9th. A trial in Arizona is scheduled for January 5th, 2026, for the alleged fake electors and Trump associates, including his former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Mother Jones reported June 4th that President Donald Trump's pardon attorney was considering pardons for the accused fake electors. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people that voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
In sitcoms, when someone has a problem, they just blurt it out and move on.
Well, I lost my job and my parakeet is missing. How was your day?
But the real world is different. Managing life's challenges can be overwhelming. So, what do? We get support. The Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council have mental health resources available for you at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. See how much further you can go when you take care of your mental health.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name is Jim Santel. We are spending this first hour talking all about rule of law issues right here in the state of Wisconsin, including this major decision coming out of our Supreme Court having to do with administrative rulemaking and the vesting of responsibility in the executive branch to do that, absent clear judicial oversight and action by the legislature, including judicial oversight eventually, but a legislative response to those rules. Also now talking about this major new challenge to congressional districts here in the state of Wisconsin, brought by a bipartisan group of business people, interesting plaintiffs, and also bringing the lawsuit not immediately in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, But going back to the foundation, which is the trial courts and filing this lawsuit in the Dane County Circuit Court, saying in connection with their lawsuit a couple of interesting things, that anti-competitive, that is, gerrymanders that are every bit, they say, as antithetical to democracy and to law as partisan gerrymanders and racial gerrymanders, anti-competitive gerrymanders, where in fact you've got so much of the population described within a particular district that they're no longer competitive, that the possibility of new candidates coming forward cannot be promoted. And for that reason, they say this is because electoral competition is vital to democracy, and it's as vital as partisan fairness. Absent competition for those positions by lots of candidates, incumbents in those positions and new candidates, you don't get a constitutional representation. It is an interesting theory now before the Wisconsin Circuit Court in Dane County. They note along the way that the median margin of victory for candidates in the 8 congressional districts in Wisconsin since the maps were enacted years ago is close to 30 percentage points. That's the median. That's the median margin of victory for candidates. That they point to and say there's no competitive nature anymore in many of these districts. And for that reason, the courts should redraw those lines. Plainly will not happen by the 2026 election, but it goes back and embraces fundamental notions of bipartisanship. We should all be interested in ensuring accurate and meaningful representation in our Congress, as we anticipate that in our State House as well. We should be doing this by developing a trial record. We should be doing it with, yes, sometimes the slow but deliberative process of judicial review and oversight and decision making. All of that coming out of the state of Wisconsin. We have callers on our line, and we're delighted to have them with us this morning. First, let's begin with Dick in Madison. Dick, thanks so much for joining me this weekend.
Thanks for taking my call, Jim. I have a theory, and I had a little debate with a friend about William Barr. I bring him up because now we have another attorney general who's basically just his personal attorney, in my opinion. But to Barr, my thing is, had he not been his attorney general, we wouldn't even be talking about Donald Trump. And I say that because the way he skewed the Mueller report, I think he would have been a slam dunk. He would have been impeached. I mean, he took that thing and made it into something it totally wasn't. You know, how much of it did he redact, or whatever the word I'm looking for?
Right.
By the time he got done with it, it was a big nothing burger. And then he saved him again after the insurrection. And either one of those two times without William Barr, we don't even talk about Donald Trump any further.
Hugely important point, Dick. I agree with you that people make decisions, right? And it's not just institutions of the office. It's important to understand who are occupying those offices. I could not agree with you more with respect to not only William Barr's assessment of the Mueller report. That was a report that basically was setting forth in lurid detail identifying exactly who would say what at a trial, whether it's an impeachment, a conviction trial in the United States Senate, or in another setting in a federal district court. That Mueller report set forth arguably 10 different instances of obstruction of justice early on. Our attorney general at the time, Dick, you get it just right. He misinterprets, misreads, probably intentionally, and describes it in a way that's actually just plain not right and not accurate and not true. And again, the Mueller report, the full Mueller report is out there. You can read it, and you can come to the conclusion that indeed there was a basis to go ahead to impeach this president way back in the early portion of his first term for the things that he had done obstructing justice. Certainly the insurrection that happens afterwards, of course, that's January 6th, just at the end of Donald Trump's term. There, we were beginning to build again, as Jack Smith did, this case against Donald Trump. Basically ran out of time, and the next administration determined that they could not go ahead for reasons that are also troubling to me, and anticipating the arrival of the Trump administration, dismissed that case too. Lots of things based upon history. And again, we think about those different timelines, Dick, that could have been changing the very nature of our democracy today if our elected officials are appointed officials, in the case of an attorney general, whether it's Bill Barr or Merrick Garland, if they had made different decisions, our world would be different today. Appreciate that comment so very much, Dick. Also hearing from Jack in Merrimack. Jack, your comment or question.
Yeah, I'm looking at, I can only assume it's a press release from Republican Senator Tomczyk. It says for immediate release. And one of the statements on this is about the Wisconsin Supreme Court's ruling on the legislative oversight.
Yes.
And he says, quote, this ruling is, and this is a quote, a dangerous overreach that undermines the fundamental checks and balances in our state government. You talk about a flat out lie. What we have here is legislative action that's established agencies. Those agencies then hire people who are experts in the field. And I know because I've taken some of those civil service exams. I've been offered it a couple of times a job. And it takes you have to know what you're doing.
You do. Right. And it's Tom, Jack, to your very good point, it is not a legislative overreach, as Mr. Tomczyk says. It's just the opposite. It's a reaffirmation of the rule of law here in the state of Wisconsin. Appreciate very much that observation as well. When we come back, we'll go to the United States Supreme Court and other things in Washington, D.C.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. President Trump now says he's going to impose 30% tariffs on imports from the European Union and Mexico, unless those countries make trade deals with the U.S. by August 1st. But ABC's Olivia Rubin says many countries are waiting to see if that deadline slides.
This date has been pushed back. Right now it sits at August 1st. Previously it sat at July 9th, and previously it sat at Liberation Day in April. So the can keeps getting kicked down the road, and we'll just have to see whether that remains or whether August 1st sticks, and that is, in fact, when these tariffs go into effect.
Memorials are underway this weekend in Texas after last week's catastrophic flash flooding that killed 129 people. One of them was 17-year-old Malaya Grace Hammond. Her father says it happened when their minivan was overrun with floodwater.
I understand the word deluge now in a way that I never wanted to understand it.
Authorities say 160 people are still missing. This is ABC News. The Trump administration